The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the speaker. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice from your own physician.
Hello, I'm Michael Failings, professor of neurosurgery at the University of Toronto, and we're here to talk about an ever-increasing complication of falls in the elderly, namely the phenomenon of a central cord injury. And I'm joined by two esteemed colleagues, and I might suggest that each of them could perhaps introduce themselves.
My name is Yi Lu, and I'm assistant professor at Brigham and Women's Hospital, Harvard Medical School in Boston, and the section chair of the spinal cord injury section at NASS.
Hi, I'm Konstantinos Margetis. I'm assistant professor of neurosurgery from Mount Sinai in New York, and I'm a member of the NASS Spinal Cord Injury Committee.
So I'll start off the conversation. Yi, you're the chair of the section of spinal cord injury for NASS, and perhaps you could talk to us a bit about the shifting demographics of spinal cord injury.
Yeah, absolutely. What we noticed the recent years has been a clear trend of decreasing the spinal cord injury in the younger population, which is a very, very good trend. There's a decreasing amount of diving injuries, car accident injuries causing severe spinal cord injury in the younger population. On the other hand, there has been an increasing trend of geriatric spinal cord injury from fall. So, and those patients, a lot of those patients had pre-existing spinal cord stenosis and they cause incomplete spinal cord injury. Sometimes we refer to that as central cord syndrome. We think this is a very important topic and would like to talk about more about that today.
Konstantinos, perhaps you could share with us your thoughts on central cord injury, maybe define this for the audience and talk to us about where some of the management challenges and controversies have been.
Absolutely. So central cord syndrome is a form of incomplete spinal cord injury where the motor deficits and the symptoms are more severe in the upper extremities compared with the lower extremities. There have been a couple of variations in the definition of central cord syndrome in the literature, but this is the most widely accepted definition that it is incomplete spinal cord injury with more pronounced symptoms from the upper extremities compared with the lower extremities. It is it has become right now probably the most common form of incomplete spinal cord injury, at least in North America. And there are some specific challenges with this type of spinal cord injury. One of the challenges is that the patients are usually older with more comorbidities, more frail, and that poses additional challenges in the already highly challenged pathology that is called spinal cord injury.
So Dr. Failings, you have mentioned that you feel the name, the term of central cord syndrome should be updated, should be without knowledge on incomplete spinal cord injury accumulates. We understand more and more about what exactly is central cord syndrome or what exactly is not. So can you elaborate more on that?
Yeah, thank you. And the issue I think is becoming important because so-called central cord syndrome is now the commonest type of spinal cord injury that we're seeing in developed countries such as in North America, in Europe, and in Japan. So central cord injury was coined by Richard Schneider to describe a type of an injury that typically will occur in an older patient, often with a cervical stenosis due to spondylosis. Typically, it's an extension injury, commonly from a fall, and in most cases, there's not a fracture. And the cord is bruised, and it was thought that there was a central hematoma that picked off the hand and the arm fibers that were hypothesized to be medially located in the corticospinal tract. And through his own experience, Schneider advocated against surgical intervention, and this was in the 1950s, and that was probably a wise recommendation. What we now recognize is that central cord syndrome is really a variation of a severe incomplete cervical cord injury, and the trajectory, outcome, and management should really be dictated by the neurological level of the patient, the extent of cord compression, and then also issues related to medical stability.
So you have done a lot of studies on the timing for spinal cord injury, and you have recently done a lot of study on the timing of the surgery for central cord syndrome. Can you tell us about what you recently found that can guide the practice pattern for people treating the central cord syndrome all the time?
Yeah, thank you. So I've been pursuing over the course of my career the concept that's now been referred to as time is spine, and that is that by operating early, within a 24-hour period or earlier, and by decompressing the spinal cord and stabilizing the unstable spine, you can reduce the secondary injury phenomena and improve the outcome. So about a decade ago, my colleagues and I published a study called the STASCIS study. And this was a multi-center study in cervical cord injuries. We found that operating within 24 hours at a median time of 14 hours resulted in an almost threefold greater rate of significant neurological recovery that we defined as two or more Asia grades. But the topic of central cord syndrome has remained controversial because these patients often have an injury pattern that is a bit less severe and they don't have a fracture. And these patients have been traditionally managed non-operatively. But I felt that it was time to reevaluate this, and it's been challenging to do so. And we were able to accomplish this by merging three large data sets. The STASCIS data set, the North American Clinical Trials Network Registry, and data from the NASCIS 3 clinical trial. And then we did a technique called propensity-based matching. And this is essentially where you pick a patient and then statistically you have a twin of that patient by picking many important covariates. So we're able to do this, and we had 93 patients with central cord syndrome that were operated on within 24 hours, and then 93 patients that had delayed surgical intervention. And we found in general that there was a significantly higher improvement in upper extremity motor strength for all patients when they're operated on with 24 hours. And the effects were particularly striking for the patients with a more severe injury pattern, a so-called Asia C injury pattern. So these data were just published in JAMA Surgery a couple of weeks ago. I presented this today in the best papers session at NASS. And we anticipate that these data will help to inform new guidelines that are under evolution for the management of spinal cord injury.
Dr. Felix, for the Asia C, there was a clear signal in your study, and that was very convincing for all of us. For the Asia C, the signal was there, but not as strong as for Asia C. What do you think was the cause for that difference between C and D?
Yes, yeah, so the challenge, I think, relates to the outcome measures that we use. And so the Asia system doesn't work very well in patients with Asia D injuries because you run into ceiling effects. And my hypothesis is that if we were to focus on neuropathic pain, spasticity, and hand function, we might be able to discern a signal. So I think we're kind of running out of time, but perhaps I might ask each of you to maybe give us one or two take-home messages, and then we'll close things out.
Thank you. I think for central cord or for Asia C type incomplete spinal cord injury, timing is still very important for those patients. Early surgery preserve, improve their neurologic functions. Of course, in the past, people have been concerned about it, and a lot is because of the understanding of the spinal cord injury we had has improved tremendously. How to preserve the function after injury, and how to do the surgical techniques meticulously, that improved our outcome for surgery tremendously. That's, I think now, when we have a patient who has an Asia C spinal cord injury incomplete coming to the hospital, the earlier the surgery can be done within 24 hours, the better the outcome will be.
Konstantinos, the last word is yours.
Yes, for AZD, I think that the strong consideration should be placed on doing an urgent surgery after the patient is medically optimized. But there's more research that needs to be done on whether there are some subgroups in AZD that can benefit more from an even earlier and more aggressive in terms of timing surgical intervention.
Thank you, gentlemen, for an interesting conversation, and stay tuned for further developments from the NASS spinal cord injury section.